You are listening to the Furlow Bros Tech Podcast, episode 276, a Pineapple Express of Consumer Technology.
Episode 276 of the Furlow Bros Tech Podcast. Today is January the 8th, 2017. I'm Matthew Dean Furlow, and accepting his Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor is my brother, James Furlow.
Is that happening today?
Yeah, like right now.
Whoa. Actually. Golden Globes. Yeah, like Which one is that one again? I feel like I ask this every single time.
The Golden Globes is the precursor to the Academy Awards in many ways.
Okay, so that's a TV one?
No. It's movies. Oh. It's movies and stuff. But it's like it's the one where they all drink at. So they'll you're viable to get. I don't even know what the difference between it and like I don't know what the nuance of the Golden Globe is, to be completely honest. But I do know that this is the one where they're encouraged to have a couple while they're at the award ceremony, and then and that way they'll give really long, unwise responses when they get their acceptance speeches and things along that line.
And we like that.
Yes. Well, yeah, especially because they're funny.
Gotcha. And
they tend to try to get a host who's a little bit,
who's hosting it.
This week is, what's his name? Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. Should be pretty good. La La Land in the running. Manchester by the Sea in the running. You know.
Yeah, I know you love that movie. Can't stop thinking about it.
I had an event.
You brought it up.
I had an event. I had something happen this week that, although not as sad as the events of the movie, was reminiscent of it, and that happened to somebody else, which is vague, but I gotta keep it vague. I was hanging out with my girlfriend, and I was like, yeah, it sort of reminds me of Manchester by the Sea, and like both of us were like immediately like, oh, I'm really sad now.
Oh. Hey, that's rough.
It's a good movie. But yeah, anyways.
Yeah. Cool, man. We've just been having snow days like a bunch in a row. So
that's awesome.
Hanging out, ignoring the rest of the world. It's been kind of nice.
That is nice. That's, how much snow do you have?
I think we got a solid like 2.5-3 inches.
That is some serious snow.
Yeah. They ended up canceling church.
So, whoa.
Yep.
It doesn't seem like enough snow to do that to me, but
have any plows in the town.
Oh, okay.
That half an inch is suddenly a big deal.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? I can feel that. Yeah. We've had an atmospheric river here in California, which has been pretty exciting. Mm. Just an unbelievable amount of rain.
Deluge.
Yeah. 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 You know, it's really interesting. I found this out. They used to call an atmospheric river, it had another name. It was called the Pineapple Express, but they decided to change it for some reason, probably because that's like a go-to drug reference now.
Yeah.
But,
interesting.
Yeah. That's what we like to bring people on this show, James. Facts about their weather. But
I like it.
Oh man. So you just want to get into this, James? Because it's CES this week.
I do.
You know what then? With no further ado, this week, like every week, we're gonna be talking about technology and Okay, I got this, James. I'm in the mindset. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, CES, and of course, the technology they've developed for it. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
I founded and work for HPI. However, I do not represent HPI or any of their opinions. I also own part of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club.
Nice.
I don't even know if HPI was at CES. I feel like they were. I just literally did not read a single thing about it.
One of your coworkers was there, who I'm friends with on Facebook.
Yeah.
He's
seen what the other companies are doing to try to figure out if we can embed print opportunities into whatever it is that they're creating. Oh, that's a cool robot. Can it print? That is his purpose. So, yeah, he's there for official business.
That's different, though.
But
that's
definitely. He's not there. Booth.
Right. That's
he's the other side of the table. You know, he gives you someone to talk to, and he goes, "Oh, that's neat. Can you print from it?" It's like that's his thing.
It's how many people say no, but we want to.
Only takes a couple. I have no idea.
That's true.
He's the kind of guy where he gets sucked into the tech stuff anyway. So
I don't know
how good of a job he does. I know he does a good job. He asks, but
Funny.
I don't know.
But he's one of those people that are thrilled to be there because he likes all the new tech stuff and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, it's times like that where I tell him, you have the best job in the world. Don't let go. Or I tell him he has the best job at HP. It's actually what I'll tell him. Don't let go of that one. Because, yeah, he goes to all the different trade shows. And literally, like, that's this thing, like, trying to figure out ways in which we can create relevant print opportunities. And so he meets with the different companies, vendors.
There's a word you threw in there that really makes his job a whole lot more difficult.
You know, that's the point. It's not just slap printer onto everything. I actually think he has a very interesting, it's not an insight. I mean, it is, but it's a thesis maybe is the way to say it, or talking point. I don't know the right way to say it. I love how we were like, anyways, he talks about how the olden days, they you would go file, print, and then print off whatever you wanted.
Yes.
Control/Command-P was kind of the deal. Yeah. And he's like, people don't do that anymore. They don't even do file, save as. Like, that goes, that's old school. That's laptop or desktop thinking, which, like, cool, we got a printing solution for desktop operating systems. But if you think more about, all these other internet connected things and as operating systems, kind of like the idea that we've talked about, like, there are lots of computer companies out there. They just don't look like computers anymore.
Right.
It's like, you need to figure out ways to print in ways that make sense. So for example, in Facebook, he's like, we've got a bot where you say, hey, can you print this for me? And it will do it for you. Same with Slack. There's a Slack bot printer. And he talks about how we need to create different APIs that allow you to print similar to however you would share or ask for something on whatever that service is. So for example, with Alexa, it's voice controlled. You would say, Alexa, print off. I don't know what she would print off, but whatever that is. So maybe you're looking up a recipe, right? Find me a recipe for a delicious dessert, print that off for me. Like, that would make sense.
I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I actually do think that if you could, there's probably a narrow use case for it, but if you were to do it, there'd be a heavy use case for it. But connecting a drone to a printer and just being able to like especially as drones become more and more intelligent and can kind of control where they're going and what they're looking at. Like, if you can basically be like, yo, drone, I need you to fly up above this job site and take a picture, print it out. And then, so it just flies up, takes a picture, and the printer starts printing it out. And so that you can like take it out and you and all your coworkers can look at it and write on it and draw on it. Like, I could actually see use cases like that where, I can't believe I'm arguing in favor of printing here.
But. Yeah, well, that's part of some of the stuff we're trying to figure out too, is how do you close that loop? How do you like take that picture, print it off, annotate it like you were just talking about, and then rescan it so that it's digital again? And the print is literally useful for 5 minutes. Like, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And but anyways, yeah, it's an interesting, funny story on the printing. So I bought a new toilet. And the instructions say that the hole, the rough-in for the toilet, needs to be 12 inches or at least 12 inches from the wall. And I kept looking at it, and I kept doing my tape measure up against the wall, and it kept being 12 inches to the edge of the pipe. And I kept looking at it going, oh no, it's only 12 inches to the edge of the pipe. I need to be 12 inches to the center. And it literally wasn't until I found the instructions online, I printed them off and had them sitting there with me and measuring out, where I went, oh, the middle of the pipe's actually 14 inches. I'm good.
That's funny. That was exactly my, like, I didn't realize that was the problem, because you said, oh no, I've got to be to the middle. And I was like, no, you should be fine. You've got more than enough room.
I know. It was totally true. But it literally wasn't until because it had it in the instruction manual, like, check all these measurements type of thing.
So this is going to require you to go to YouTube. Okay. If you want to. So this is a project that I'm working on, and it requires this, like, this stand with
motors. So what I'm looking at, it looks like almost like a pyramid's not the way to say it. It's
a tripod. Like
a tripod, but with no top part. It's just the legs come up.
It's small. It fits in the palm of my hand.
Yeah, it's maybe, 2 inches tall? Maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
And it looks like you have three cylindrical things on each leg. Yeah. Are those?
So each leg is mounted to, is a motor is mounted to it.
Okay.
And I'll show off, I can show off this project more as I get further down into it, but I needed to make this little stand piece out of aluminum. And I've said this before, there's this idea when I'm at work. It's like, if you're measuring a lot of stuff, the more measurements you have to make and take in order to build something, like, the less prepared you are. Which is, as me as an engineer, I'm like, I'm gonna take 100 different, you know, I'm gonna make a bunch of different measurements and stuff and be very, very precise. But when it comes to manufacturing, like, you want fixtures, you want that you can, like, put your part into and sort of makes it so you don't have to measure anything. You want templates that you can just put stuff in and you don't have to measure anything. If you're measuring by hand, you're fighting an uphill battle. And I made that entire little, like, piece with, like, these very precise, like, angle bends. And I made the entire thing by hand in like 30 minutes. And one of the big helps to it was I printed out a 1x1, print of the part at laid out flat and a 1-to-1 ratio of it, and just, like, taped it to the piece of metal.
Nice.
And so I had to take, like, no measurements because I had everything right there, and I took one measurement at the very end just to double check the height, and I was like, okay, it worked. But yeah, I say all this to say, James, your job's not pointless.
Yeah, it may not be mainstream anymore. There's definitely other things that are more mainstream at things like CES.
Yeah, so let's talk about that instead of this. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we're on Instagram and Twitter and other places. For me, Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram is NextWiggin4.
I'm James Furlow. Everywhere.
Everywhere. And if you want to get more about the show, we have a wonderful website, furlowbros.com, where we're gonna add all the links and clicks and videos and everything that we talk about today is gonna be there. That's true every week. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter, which is basically that compressed into an email. And what's great about that is if you just want, like, a roundup for what the week happened, it's a great place to go and just see the modern tech stuff that we are going to commentary on all day today. So, yeah.
That's awesome. But before we get to see
you. Ah, jeez.
I know.
Keep teasing it.
I snuck one in there because I thought, well, I like real estate. So what can I say? When I see a real estate article that's talking about 5 ways the real estate industry will completely transform over the next decade that's due to technology, I have to click. That's like, I don't have a choice. And this was actually a really good one. I was shocked. I was like, oh, this is super cool. So just real quick, I want to run through these 5 different ways. Okay. And again, you can tell I kind of have my landlord hat on. That's how this works. So I get excited about this stuff. But one of the big problems that landlords have is figuring out what to set their rents at. I literally had someone call me over the weekend saying, hey, I got this place. What do you think it would rent for? And I mean, I get that question asked all the time. just because people are like, what, I don't know what the rents are. It's super annoying to try to set them. You might set them, whatever. And my feedback's always like, well, what do you think it is? Add $100 and start there. And because you can always lower it later.
Once you have somebody living there, it's more difficult to raise it.
Yeah, totally true. Well, and you usually find, like, if you get a deluge, if you will, or a Pineapple Express of people, I'm using that right, people applying, then it's like, oh, dang, I said it too low, but now it's too late. So, you know, there it is. So one of the new technologies, and I'm seriously going to check this out, it's this South African startup. They have created a way for tenants to bid on the rent, just like. So you set a minimum bid or a minimum rent, and then you let people pre-qualify or however that works, and then they bid, and you give it to the highest bidder, you officially qualify them, and they move forward.
That is going to make things so ugly in places like San Francisco. That's not even funny.
I know. I'm just like, but it's brilliant because it answers that one question. What's this place worth? Just takes it to market rate. Because one of their things was like, you know, you might have something where, to normal people, it's worth $900 a month, which I know you're laughing at those numbers. But someone who, like, it happens to be two blocks away from the work, they might happily pay $1,100 for it.
Right.
And so we've taken care of that. There's some other ones where, being a real estate broker, they charge 3% from transactions. And well, it's very quickly coming to a point where online solutions work just fine for 95% of, transactions. And so it's something where it's like, yeah, they're just going to all go through a website and there'll be some sort of flat fee instead of the 3% thing. Another one is that this may sound like a surprise, but I know it's said in this way. But virtual reality is going to start playing a role in purchases where sellers will go on and create virtual tours. And then, like, you literally are going to visit how many properties you want while sitting in your home. And this is especially important for things like long distance stuff. Like if you're moving for work, now all of a sudden, you can actually go check out the property. Cool. That one's going to be huge. Another one is that they're getting more creative ways to collect rent from tenants. And so one of them is there's a company somewhere. I don't see their name. SparkRental.com. They're developing a system that will deduct it directly from a paycheck. And so renters don't even have to think about paying anymore. And landlords don't have to worry about them paying. And so it actually takes the credit part kind of out of the equation. Plus, they actually do report to the credit bureau. So it helps build credit, which is nice.
Oh, man.
Another one. You'll love this one. The blockchain is going to be used for real estate transactions. Booyah. And so this makes a ton of sense if you know anything about Bitcoin. It's that idea of, like, there's a single record that is copied and distributed everywhere. And so one of the things that happens when you buy a property is they have to do a title search, which literally is people looking at trying to find all the transaction histories of this certain piece of real estate to make sure that it, quote, has clean title, i.e. No one else lays claim to the property who you are trying to buy it from.
Right.
Which is super important. And it's important to the point where you even buy title insurance, which is essentially you're buying insurance saying, if the title company was wrong, then they'll cover your legal fees to figure out who owns it.
I know, it blows my mind. I mean, and it's less important in a place like California, but I've had conversations about, like, on the East Coast and stuff. They have landlines where, like, it is the original deed that determines what the property is, and those original deeds can be 200 years old or older. And so it's like, it gets really complicated sometimes when if somebody gets it wrong.
But you could put all that information onto some sort of blockchain technology and there it all is. It's, you don't have to check anymore. You don't need insurance. It's all there. And if it's not there, it doesn't exist essentially.
Right.
But anyway, it's pretty cool. I thought it was good. Those are five ways the real estate industry is going to change. And I think all of these are, like, and it's happening sooner rather than later. And I want so bad to try an auction.
Yeah. That one's an interesting one to me. It's got the feeling of like, yeah. Oh.
Yeah. I think it's cool. But anyways, let's talk about CES for reals.
I know. There's your one not CES related thing.
I think the way we want to do this, I think, is maybe not start with the roundups, but so what we've done is we have different categories and then we just kind of have like an overall one. Yeah. And just kind of go through the different categories and talk about those and then maybe loop back to the roundups if we missed anything.
I like it.
Sound like a plan? All right.
I agree.
So the first one, which I honestly think was the biggest thing that was there is, I don't know. I think we're going to call it voice control. That sounds really not right.
Okay. So that actually is it. But one of the things there was an article that I really liked that might kind of shed light on this, and it was by The Verge. It was basically, no, this toothbrush doesn't have artificial intelligence was the title of the article.
Artificial intelligence.
And it's a really great article because it goes into because turns out that was sort of a thing for products to be it's AI intelligence. And a big category of products that were quote unquote artificially intelligent were using machine learning to do voice control, which is a type of, it's like technically right in a really, really technical sort of way. I guess we didn't we used artificial intelligence to understand what you said and then just regular programming after that. but that is a huge category of a lot of the artificial intelligence was, and it's that specifically voice control. I'll come back to this. You know, your toothbrush doesn't have AI later.
Okay. But specifically about the voice control stuff, I'm thinking Alexa, Google Home, HomeKit, those kind of things, or Siri, whatever, where you're speaking to them, barking commands, if you will, and then they do stuff. And it appears it was pretty clear that Alexa killed it and was huge. And I think I need to give a small disclosure here.
Okay.
So it turns out that I received a late Christmas present.
Ah.
Yeah. And from my padres. And I got an Echo for Christmas.
That is so super awesome.
I'm living the Alexa dream.
Can you talk to it? Talk to her?
No, she's in the living room right now. I know. I'll put together a video of something. I'm using it.
Have you seen that video of the little kid asking Alexa to play Twinkle Twinkle? But the little kid is like little kid voice. Like,
yeah.
Can't enunciate anything. And Alexa comes up with a list of like, okay, I think you want this list. And they're all like adult themed results. Yeah. and the parents freaking out like, no, Alexa, stop. it's pretty funny.
Wow. Yeah. Our daughter is like 19 months old and she gets it. Like anytime we say Alexa, she turns and she looks at it and like waits for the response. And you can tell like she wants to say something, but doesn't quite get it yet. Cause she's still on like single word talking, but like, oh my gosh, it's going to be interesting once she actually starts putting together words. Like, and that's what's so fascinating about it. It's all these new input devices. Like she's going to start, how do I say it? So we have an iPad and she loves to press the home button just cause it's fun. And so we often have to lock it on a single app, but once we do, she could use it and she'll play on it for probably way longer than we should let her and totally understands it. And just recently she's figured out the whole, I go to this folder and I tap on this app. And so you can start to see the development of her using these devices.
Human machine interface.
Yeah, and then and I can already tell, like, dude, when she starts talking, she's gonna be talking to Alexa all day long.
It's yeah,
weird. And but yeah, so they're just they're intuitive interfaces, which is cool. But that all that to say, cool. Yeah, I've been playing with it all week, and it's a cool device.
That is really cool. That's
and
exciting.
I would love to get into a conversation, and maybe we will later in this little section here about like the difference between say Alexa and Apple's HomeKit. Because now this is one of those situations where, like, you know how you buy a new car and then all of a sudden you see that new car everywhere on the road? Yes. You're like, what the heck? I thought it was special. That's totally like the phase that I'm in right now where there's all these articles. And granted, like, I picked the perfect week to get
it. I know.
But I was like, wow, look at all these articles about Alexa on CES, which turns out, like, there were genuinely a lot of articles about Alexa.
Well, so this is, yeah. So, yeah. Sorry. Go.
Oh yeah. So it wasn't just me being super sensitive to it, though I was super sensitive to it. But it's just crazy. Like, clearly Alexa is, how do I want to say it? Like, I read an interesting article that was like HomeKit is doing, it's still focusing on like light switches and, turning binary options, turn this on, turn this off,
and
whatever.
And very general purpose ones too. Not like turn off the oven, but just like turn on the power to the TV sort of thing. Like,
right. Which is fine. And, but Alexa's taking a, and I guess that's the other thing is like Apple is very much taking that natural language processing to the extreme of like, we want you to be able to pretty much say anything and it will figure it out.
Right.
And whereas Alexa is like, no. Like, you have to say this specific command, otherwise it won't get it.
Right.
And though I've noticed it's not bad, it's usually like there's two or three derivations of it that it would understand what you're talking about. But if you were like, Alexa, turn up the volume, it would be like, to what? Like, you have to say, turn the volume to a number 1 through 10, not turn the volume high. It doesn't get that. And you can't be like, turn up the vol. Like, what are you talking about? So, right.
Which the Google Home, for the record, was able to do. I could just say, hey, turn up the volume, and it would like jump it up like 30%.
Yeah, which is cool, and which is what's cool about competition, because I bet you anything Alexa does that or will soon. Did you see that they went – so a year ago they were at 1,000 skills, and now they're up to 7,000 skills?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Well,
it's crazy because it's like – so one of the big things that's going on here, and this is just great, but it happened 2 years in a row, was like – I don't know how much you remember this, but that was like nobody expected Amazon to be anywhere – present at CES. And this is like one of the great parts about this is the big companies cast a giant shadow because they don't come but everybody's like talking about it. And 3-4 years ago it was Apple every single year was biggest shadow was cast by Apple. It was everybody trying to deal with Apple or have Apple compatible products or whatever. And then last year it was just became obvious that it was Amazon and Alexa, which was not only a surprise to everybody at CES, but it was a shock to Amazon.
Yeah, totally.
Which is really kind of like, how did you guys not see this coming? You were building it. But what I guess was going on this year is that I was reading articles and there was an expectation that this was going to happen, that Alexa was going to be a big deal. We talked about it last week in our prediction show that, Alexa would be a runaway hit at CES. Well, so everybody would just go on Amazon and going like, what are your expectations for this week? Amazon was like, well, we're expecting like a handful of different devices and a couple of different new services and that we've been working with specifically with these companies and like we know what's coming. But they've also opened up so much of Alexa and how you like plug into it and what you can build it into. There was a certain amount of they didn't know who was coming with what. And so they were blown away when there were like four times as many devices that were Alexa enabled in some way, where Alexa was literally built in or it just has Alexa integrations. And they were like, how is Amazon being off guard by this? It blows my mind.
I mean, that's one of the joys of they've got like an open API.
Yeah.
And so anyone can write to it. Whereas Apple like requires special chips and you got to register and all that fun jazz. And so then like a lot of it's not totally production ready at CES. Also helps. And, but just the fact that it's like this API that, oh yeah, anyone can, you know, connect to it and do your thing. That's pretty cool. So you do get really neat, interactions that you just don't get with like HomeKit, and Google Home will get there. I mean, it's like we did this. It's actually a super fun game. You can play 20 questions with Alexa.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Alexa does the guessing and you give the yes or no answer. And so she's like, pick something. And then she'll ask you right off the bat, is it an animal, a plant? She's like, she picks like 3 or 4 things and then kind of goes from there. And I would say 75% of the time she guesses it. And one of them, like, we picked our dog, Vinny, dachshund. And it was like, is it a dachshund? Like, what? How did you know that? And it's weird where it's like, she'll be going along and she'll get like 10 questions deep, asking some pretty, like, you're like, all right, I get it. She'll be like, it's an animal. All right. Is it large? Like, no. Okay. Is it furry? Yeah. Does it, you know, can you own one? You know, that kind of like, they'll ask those questions. And then like it's around like question 11 or 13. All of a sudden she starts to ask these really oddball types of questions where you're like, what in the world? Where it'd be like, I've got to try to think of what it might be, but it'd be like, would you put one inside of a box? Like, wait, what? No, why would I put it inside of a box? And it was like, and then it would be like, are its eyes normally blue? Like, what? That doesn't sound like it matters. And like, I don't know. And then, and you literally, like, you go through this string of questions where you're like, wow, that was really weird. And then she'll get back to like, you know, is it short? You'd be like, oh, yes. Okay. Is it a dachshund? You're like, what? How? So there's this weird, like, there's this processing thing going on there where it's like she narrows it down to these, like, to these other, like, these 3 or 4 different possibilities and then just eliminates them until it's an obvious one. Yeah. It's really interesting. But anyways, but it's this cool, fun game.
And it's one of those things where there's probably a certain percent of the time the answer is, like, you know, one thing. And there are certain questions, or I should say, we're tempted to ask questions that have a high probability of giving like
yes
answers. Well, yeah, exactly. A yes. And giving answers that don't necessarily narrow things down very much. And it's because it's all becomes a sort of a statistical question of how often does this answer lead to these different things? And so once you get into sort of, you get the very general yes answers down, then there's going to be a bunch of different answers where she can probably ask you another 10 answers where they'll all be yes and might lead her to the right answer. But if she gives you these questions that, yeah, like you said, you know, that have these like low percentages of being a yes, they actually in these questions together will really narrow down the field of possible yes answers. Cause yes answers aren't necessarily good. It's fascinating. No.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super interesting. But at the same time, she also controls my lights, which is super convenient. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that the variety of skill types is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Alexa is casting that biggest shadow that we were talking about, where you could just do a ton of different things with it, where you can tell it, preheat my oven to 350 degrees. I don't see HomeKit doing that anytime soon. And Google, it's like they were all talking about like essentially it was Alexa, HomeKit, Google Home. It was kind of the order of which the different.
Nice job, Cortana, really getting yourself put out there.
I know. They were like, and I think someone said that too. They're like, oh yeah, and Microsoft does everything too. But it was something like, I don't remember the exact numbers. I read it early on, but it was like, Alexa, and maybe it's in your article, had like, it was a pretty big number. It was like 30 different companies doing things for them.
Let me run through some specifics, because part of what's fun with CES. So Westinghouse, Element, there's three different companies. They're all building TVs, including Fire TV software and a remote that includes Alexa voice control. So you'll have a TV with a remote that you can use Alexa on. LG put Alexa in a refrigerator, which also has a giant 29-inch touchscreen and no camera. Kind of. There was a refrigerator
touchscreen and no camera.
There's no camera inside of it to actually like keep track of what's inside your.
Brilliant.
I know. LG also put Alexa into a hub, a smart home robot. Lenovo has a smart assistant, which is basically an Echo. It's literally an Echo, but like with a great sound system.
Cool.
Yeah. Mattel's
we listen to music all the time with it. It's super convenient. I by the way, one of the predictions already happened. I'm maybe now an Amazon Prime member. There were two things that happened where I needed to ship a whole bunch of things to me.
Yeah.
And then I had Alexa and I was like, okay, whatever. It totally makes sense now.
This is gonna become this I feel like this episode's gonna be should be titled an infomercial for Amazon. But So I'm building this little thing with the motors that I was telling you. Well, these motors are made in China, so all the screw holes are metric screw holes, and the top screw holes are M2 screw holes, which are 2 millimeter screws. They're really small. And if you think nobody uses metric screws in America, nobody, and I mean nobody, uses M2 screws in America. I have found one store in all of the Bay Area that has one length M2 screw that I could that I was able to grab and be like, well, this is too long, it won't work, so I have to buy them off of Amazon. I bought 100 of these screws for $3 off of Amazon that are the right length. They're like super short, super small, and everywhere else that I was looking, it was like $3 for 100 screws online and like $10 shipping and handling. Amazon Prime coming in the mail. I ordered them yesterday. They will be here tomorrow. it's great. It's what a great service. It's just nice job, Amazon. But yeah, okay. Mattel's Aristotle. It's sort of like an Echo, but with features that designed to help parents care for newborns. Pixie is making a portable puck with Alexa. GE is presenting its LED ring lamp,
which with Alexa. Looks pretty cool.
And, yeah. Omaker made a portable speaker. OnVocal made these horrible business neck buds.
Those things.
I know. Yeah.
I you can always tell whenever someone's using them.
Oh, yeah.
Because they sound super garbled. I'm like, why?
Yeah, because, you know.
You're still wearing headphones. Like, yeah. Come on.
Yeah. I know. The five device charging dock includes speaker with Alexa support, a dancing robot, a prototype alarm clock, a bedside clock speaker, which is sort of like an alarm clock. LG made a wide-eyed robot that uses Alexa. Ford is putting Alexa into their Fusion and F-150
That's
cars.
Cool.
Yeah, Volkswagen's plans to do the same. Interix is integrating Alexa with its open car platform. Huawei is including Alexa app by default on its new Mate 9 smartphones, and a couple more of those. And then just ones that have integration. Whirlpool made new washing machines, dryers, refrigerators, and ovens that can be controlled to varying degrees with Alexa. Nah, ovens. Dish Hopper DVR has a voice control. Samsung's Roomba competitor now lets you be lazier about vacuuming by just yelling at your Echo device.
Love that idea.
ADT is adding Alexa control. Wow. Linksys is Velop router system.
I don't even know
will
why.
Support a handful of commands, including to let Alexa read your Wi-Fi password out loud.
That's
really awesome, actually.
That's convenient.
Some of Conaway's air purifiers can help be controlled by Alexa.
Okay.
iDevice's new stick-on light switch for HomeKit works with Alexa. Same with Inscopio's new HomeKit process.
Is it Inscopio? I think it's Inscopio.
What did I say?
Inscopio.
Inscopio.
Inscorpio.
Array is making a connected clock with Alexa. Yeah, so there's just a bunch of different, like, these are your, like...
That's a ton of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, for a platform that Amazon's not, like, paying people to do that for. You know, they're just... People are jumping into it, and yeah, it's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
It's
list.
I get it, and it's it has a cool wow factor for one, and it's super helpful. Like I don't know. It comes back to, like, you find yourself using just the dumbest things. Like, there, it has a timer. And we use that thing all the time. It's just like, if we're doing something, Alexa, set a timer for X minutes, like, all the time.
Yeah.
And it's crazy convenient. Obviously, I did not have the Google Home. You had that. But I'm very quickly, like, I voice control is pretty sweet, man. I like, it's here for reals. I've had it on my, obviously I have it on my wristwatch using Siri. Yeah. But again, it's like, there's something different about
the fact the always listening is really important.
Which, you know, again, on my watch it is, right? I flip it up. Yeah. I say, hey Siri, you do this. And it's, yeah. Say, oh, okay, great. Everything just, yeah.
but the other side of it, and this is the big thing to me, is it's always listening to everybody in the room, even those people that aren't connected to your.
That's, you know, true. That's super convenient.
That to me is like, it just, when I realized that my roommates who don't have any of the controls for all the smart stuff that I have in my home, they have no control over my room. With Google Home, they did. And it was just like, they don't normally need it, but occasionally it's nice to be able to, if my lights turn on, like if I'm in a different country and my lights turn on because it's the alarm set, they have no way of turning it off without me. and killing the power. And these,
that's
Google
so
Home,
school.
I know,
killing
and
the power.
I know, jeez. And Alexa,
20th century.
I know, come on. What is this, 2007?
Pre iPhone days.
I know. I don't know why, but I've been making that joke, like,
which we're sitting, it's like the Apple or the iPhone 10 years ago was like this month introduced her.
It's in March.
February, right?
It's March.
Was it March?
Yeah,
wow,
it's March.
Geez, okay. So we're still like, anyways, continue.
Yeah, we are barreling towards the 10-year anniversary, though.
It's awesome.
It's been a decade.
Already starting to pop up.
It's
anyways, totally sidetracked.
Yeah. So no. And I just,
yeah,
I mean,
allows other in the household, and they know what's going on. Like if we put our daughter on timeout, I can set an alarm, and it goes off. Jesse knows about it and could go get her, or vice versa.
Right.
That's convenient. It's just the group activity stuff too. We did. We played Jeopardy once. That's another game that you can play. It tells you things, and you have to ask it questions. Which, by the way, apparently I'm amazing at Jeopardy. I did not know that. I haven't pulled one out where it was like, this guy who signed the Constitution and was also a president of some university.
Madison.
No, actually, Jesse was like, I have no idea. I went, William Jefferson? I was like, that's right. Or I was like, who is William Jefferson? And Jesse was like, how did you know that? I'm like, I don't know. I just guessed.
I watched the History Channel.
Apparently, I learned something in school. Like, I don't know. I thought William and Mary. I went, William, that's a guy's name. It's Ivy League. And I went, Jefferson, that sounds presidential. I don't know. but it was super fun. There was another one. Oh, yeah, I love that. It was like, this quarterback was the great-grandson of, of this Mormon big founder dude. And Jesse's like, I have no idea. I'm like, who is Steve Young? And she's like, what? I'm like, I had an advantage there.
Yeah. I knew some other stuff. Yeah.
But I don't know. I just, it's cool. So, and I totally get, so there's a fun factor. There's a wow factor, and it's just highly extensionable. I think they've done a good job of, and I think this is where Apple made a mistake. I'll be honest. I think Google did it right. And I think Alexa's doing it right of saying, we're going to make very specific commands, and then we're going to let it do a lot of stuff, but you have to say the right thing, which that's a little weird sometimes. Cause sometimes it's Alexa, let's play Jeopardy, or it's, Alexa, ask the Bible app to read this passage to me. And it's like, there's some subtleties there and you're like, oh, okay. You can't just say, Alexa, read this Bible passage for me.
Yeah.
Which is weird. And so, but it's very specific. But then what's cool about it is all these different companies, since they're making the specific commands, they might be like, well, we'll accept one of these seven.
Right. Yeah. I think I agree with you in that, but I would say there's a long-term, short-term game going on here. and that each company is playing differently. And I think Amazon is really winning in the short term, but I do think it's like barreling towards a, not something that can't be overcome, but I just, one of the, so this is really interesting because
yeah, eventually you get that network effect.
Right?
Where like you can do so much stuff on it. You have to, whatever you build in the future now is going to be Alexa capable in addition to HomeKit and Google Assistant.
Well, and this is my, I guess what my point is I think that this is actually more important for Amazon to do than Google and Apple. I think Apple and Google both have a lot more runway to lag behind because of the nature of those types of companies. And then this is what I'm getting at. So one of the ideas is, like, Apple consumers are just accustomed to fewer choices. Like, there's been this, like, weird world for 10 years where every single app that's ever been built has to come to the iPhone first, right?
Right.
And if it doesn't come to the iPhone first, it has to come within a week of launch. Like, you need to be an iPhone-centric device. But most of the rest of Apple's ecosystem and most of the rest of their success has kind of lived around this idea of like, no, we'll have a couple of really, really well supported peripherals that work. And so that's the strategy that Apple is going for. And I think what they really want is they want you to know, hey, you're going to be spending a lot of money on this thing. This is going to be expensive, but it's going to have, number one, it's going to work really well. And number two, it's going to be secure. And I think that security piece of it is something that Apple is focusing on in a way that neither Amazon or Google are. And this is where there's an interesting...
Well, that's fair. And you think about, like, Alexa, you can only use it in the home. Like, you can only, at least as of right now, and this is obviously changing with CES, you can't remotely access Alexa. Whereas with HomeKit, you can.
Yeah, and so there's a lot more, yes, correct. There's a lot more security challenges involved in that, and they're doing a better job of just securing stuff in the house. Apple is taking this, they're taking it slow, and they're saying, hey, we just want everything to be certified. We want everything to know it's going to work. You're not going to spend your money and then be annoyed by the performance of Siri because it doesn't work at a quality that we want it to. And for an Apple consumer base, that's a good strategy. And I think Apple's okay with the idea of, which light switch was it? I can't remember now. But there was a light switch that it is both Amazon and HomeKit, like, able because
Lutron, that's what I have. And it is for both. Super nice.
And they don't have a choice. They have to have it be compatible with both because they're both important ecosystems and they're both, you know, viable consumer bases. And I think that what you're I'm not that worried about Apple coming through. And I think Google's strategy is simple. They're like, look, we want to solve the general problem of how do you get these really specific utilities, these highly specific utilities that need a lot of information in order to work and yet be able to use them with general contextually aware commands. That's once you solve that problem for one thing, you can now solve it for very quickly for a whole bunch of different features. Right. I think that's what Google's doing.
You still got to get developers to sign up for it. I don't know.
Yeah.
The developer community is turning out to be huge on this stuff. And I think Apple missed, like, just like the original iPhone, missed the whole, third-party developers. That's a cool idea.
Yeah.
like the hook into our APIs.
Yeah, I agree. It's, I don't know. I think all three of these companies have a really good place to be.
Totally agree.
Whereas I think that Microsoft's got to be, like, really frustrated right now. They're a company that, you know, Cortana is not built around this sort of thing, but it's like, it's funny because I think a lot of these companies thought of your AI personal, your voice controlled personal assistant and your smart home as like these two different problems, not realizing that no. These are the same problem.
Yeah,
you need to fix them. You need to solve them simultaneously. And that's what Amazon did, was realize Amazon put those two things together and it's been a huge success. Apple.
Well, and I was reading something that was like, thankfully for Amazon, like, they didn't have a phone.
Right. Yeah.
And so they weren't hampered by it. Like, Apple stuff is highly device centric.
Right.
And And so that's kind of the way they thought about it. And they went, Amazon didn't have to worry about that. And so they could do things. It's the whole innovator's dilemma thing. They could do things because they were like, well, we don't have a revenue stream for this. So cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just kind of went for it. And I don't know. Yeah. It's.
And I just, it's yeah, thing. It's, it'll be interesting. I think, cool. I think.
I have one of them.
I know. I want one. I want one of them. It's funny. I got the new Apple TV, which has the Siri on it, and I did ask it to turn my lights off, and nothing happened.
Super annoying, right? I feel like that should just work. Yeah. I don't understand. All your other HomeKit stuff goes through the Apple TV.
I know.
So why not? That's. Anyways, I don't want to get into Apple bashing mode yet. We'll save that for another week. But that's annoying for sure. Yeah.
But I will
or say, be able to control my Apple TV with my watch. That would be cool. Just say, "Hey Siri, play X movie on my Apple." Oh,
all that being said,
I know
this is hilarious. It's just like, for those of you not watching, he's like frantically reaching for all of his devices to stop them. For the one thing that Alexa, that the big complaint about Alexa at this point is that it really doesn't work well outside, and I mean like. It works real bad outside, not just because there aren't very many options.
You mean like what do you mean by that? Like if you have an Echo like outside, it can't hear you?
Kinda, yeah. It's like it's twofold. It's a twofold problem. There just aren't very many devices that allow you to take Alexa with you to use it outside. There's
yeah.
not watches, there's not phones and stuff. And they were just starting to see the very beginnings of that. And on top of that, the ones that do have those features built in, like it's not really very good. Huh. Whereas the Google Assistant and Siri are awesome for being able to like, they are mobile first,
totally agree.
Platforms. And so that's something that I think Alexa really needs or Amazon is going to have to focus on over the next year or two to really like, how do we build this out in such a way that you can take it with you and not just in your car. Because that's the other problem that I think Amazon will run into is if they don't really solve that problem, there is going to come a day where like, you know, short-term, long-term problems. Short-term, Amazon found a great use case for voice control in controlling your smart home. And they solved two problems at the same time. And it's given them a huge advantage going, you know, a huge initial shot out of the gate, whereas I think long term,
that's all you need sometimes. Okay,
let yeah, me finish it's all you need sometimes. But I just think that there's this. It's not like they're through the forest. Can they solve these problems? Of course. Will
yeah.
they solve these
you know
problems?
They're working
probably.
On it. I'm getting a little concerned about my prediction. Now I'm highly biased, but of them coming out with a new Echo hardware.
Yeah,
I mean they probably will just to because they've learned stuff about sensing voices and micro speakers and stuff.
Yeah,
but. Clearly all their efforts are going to be on the software side.
Yeah.
And that's their point is, we think there's other, like this Lenovo speaker, like, no, you guys can make a better speaker than we can. Like
right.
do it. We'll right. help make sure that it's smart.
And we'll everybody who buys one of those speakers is going to get Amazon Prime.
yeah. Right. That's
how which is, I know. I love it. It's such an easy company to understand. I love it. Cause that's all they care about.
Yeah, got me hooked in.
It worked. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, so that was a conversation, but I think it was worth the time just because, like, that's a huge trend at CES this year, and I think we're going to continue to see that play out throughout at least FY17. Like you said, it's even coming to cars now. Yeah. And that seems particularly interesting to me, like with if you're inside of a Ford, to be like, Alexa, are my lights on?
Right.
Turn them off. Or Alexa, I'm coming home or whatever. You don't have to tell that. But preheat my oven to 345 or 425 because I got and a Papa Murphy's pan coming.
Hot. And the best part about that is your if for some reason somebody was storing like a plastic container in your oven that you're now preheating and you don't know it, your Nest smoke detector can control your oven and turn it off
Boom!
If it smells smoke. So you don't even have to worry about burning down your house.
Burning down the house. So your smoke detector, that's cool.
Yeah. Huh. You got to get the oven. They're expensive. This is a good bridge topic. So there were a couple of announcements for TV-related stuff, specifically towards Amazon Google Assistant. Because That was like, so there were a bunch of HomeKit things, but they're all sort of basic. There was a bunch of Amazon stuff that was really exciting and kind of stole the show. And there were like nothing that was the Amazon Assistant centric, except you pretty much Google anything. Assistant? Yeah. What did I say? Amazon Assistant.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Renaming it Google Assistant centric, except all of their, pretty much anything that like uses some form of Android.
I know they're trying to go the whole computer route.
They've
from Star Trek. I know.
They're hilarious in that it's like they've changed this name so many times, and every time they change it, you're just like, it's still not good. You're still going to have to change it again. You haven't solved the problem. They changed the name.
I know. Well, it's like every time they have some big advancement, they're like, okay, we're going to change the name again. You're like, dude, just pick a name. That's what you do.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the OK Google. That's cool. Like,
yeah. OK. Yeah.
And they want to keep that brand. And I'm all on board with that. You gotta figure it out, man.
I think that the anthropomorphizing of these things by giving them like cool weird names was a stroke of brilliance on Steve Jobs' part. You know, why would you not go with the Steve Jobs strategy on this one? Like he said, which we should give it a name, call it Siri.
They're basing it off of Star Trek. Right,
know,
and that's their, and it just goes, computer, do this for me. No, I get it. Or they have to come out with, I don't know, make Google into some sort of avatar thing. Like it's the little Google bot.
Exactly, anthropomorphize it somehow. Give it, make it, don't, because we think of Google. The word Google is a verb as much as it is the company, but it feels different. Like it doesn't. They're trying to like. Evolve the meaning.
See, I think they need to take it a step further back. Look at like the Jetsons. Because what was it? Rudy? Wasn't that the name of the computer? I just give it a name.
I know. Come on, make it easy on us. But anyways, so the Google Assistant did show up in CES, but it was almost always in TVs. So like the Air TV player, which is the Dish TV's like super smart TV box. It's got like over the air TV. It's got DVRs. It's got all sorts. Can do Netflix and stuff. But it also has Google Assistant. All Android TVs in the United States on Android 6.0 or 7.0, including Sony Bereva and Sharp Aquos line. Aquos. I can't say that. The Xiaomi Mi Box is getting Google Assistant, and the NVIDIA Shield, which is I'm going to be told I'm like. I like my Apple TV. It's my ecosystem. But if I were gonna get a little adventurous, this is the one I would get. The NVIDIA new Shield TV supports 4K HDR video and has Google Assistant.
Nice.
It is a beast of a little like box TV thing. This thing is designed.
Looks cool too.
Yeah, this is the Shield TV has always been positioned as more than just a streaming video box, and the new model has support for thousands of games, including Watch Dogs 2, which is like a super modern game with super high graphics, Assassin's Creed Syndicate, and For Honor. NVIDIA says the future games from Ubisoft will be released for the Shield TV at the same time they are released for the PC. Yeah, it's just. This thing is a monster of a set-top streaming box, and only costs 200 bones, which isn't bad. And
that's reasonable.
Yeah, definitely. And it comes with Google Assistant built in, so you don't even need a Google Home anymore, but I want one still.
So essentially what you're saying is that Google very purposely focused on TV players.
Right. Pretty much. And
that's fair.
It was pretty much they're like that's their strategy. They didn't Google Home is their one piece of like non-TV related hardware, but they're like, yeah, everything else is that's how they're gonna that's their strategy for getting Google Assistant into the home as it were. So there's a bunch of TV stuff. I'll be totally honest with you. I don't know how you feel about this, but yeah, okay, TVs are 4K now. We get it.
Well, now the new battleground is the HDR thing.
And
like that's where it's at now. It's like, I guess there's four different formats, apparently.
Yeah.
Two big ones and two like small. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's all right. I read a really interesting article about that and how like TVs are coming with like these different standards like built in and how like, oh, yeah, this is the big battle. Like who's going to have the best HDR? Which there is some truth to it, but at the same time, they're like these software, like they're not incompatible. Like you can actually fake it with the other. Like it all depends on who's sending. Yeah, it's like it's a little bit of processing on the back end in order to make it HD or to make it the correct compatibility with like whatever TV you have. Like, yeah, this is one of those ones where it feels fun because there's a bunch of different names for all of them, but they all essentially rely on the same technology. And so there's actually, there's way more crossover than they're letting on. And which one you pick almost doesn't matter. there's going to be
good news.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, that's fantastic. It's sort of like sound quality. You know, it's like there's different, you know, your Dolby surround sound is versus your Bose surround sound. Like they're different accreditations, they're different qualities, but they all work. It's not like they don't work together. Look,
right,
and I guess
right.
HDR is a similar type of technology.
But that's definitely like, that's the new focus. But yeah, 4K is like an absolute given, which is awesome. Cause it means at price is already dropping like crazy on them, which is why I almost bit the bullet.
And there's a couple of TVs out there that were like, paper thin. They call them wallpaper TVs.
I know. I was reading about that where it's like they have their own slideshows now that you literally looks like you could put a frame around it and it looks like a picture that's hanging on your mantle.
I know. It's all awesome. HDR OLED, like the blacks are true blacks.
True black.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
TVs are awesome for movies, not for TV shows. But dude, I watched Apollo 13 today just because it's awesome. If you haven't seen it in a while, I recommend it. But I didn't find myself going like, man, this little 22-inch monitor doesn't quite the brilliance of that launch. I remember, I remember I was dog sitting for one of our neighbors once.
Yes, I do.
And they had a very nice entertainment system. The screen was, it had to be twice as big as our parents at the time. I mean, you know, it was one of those like 55, 60 inch, 65 inch, whatever. I don't even know.
Monsters,
it was huge.
Yeah.
With a big sound system, with the bass and all that. See, and I remember
the key here is you were living with our parents. So this
was
like.
Yeah, I was in high school.
This was like, this is like well over a decade ago.
Yeah. This was one of those where you go, wow, they spent some money on this. And I remember flipping through the thing and they had Apollo 13 and I was like, yes. And I may or may not have cranked up the volume. And that launch sequence, I was shaking, rattling the house, and it was fantastic.
Well, it was like, I think it was the next day or maybe it was the next time we had to dog sit or something. You were like, hey, Matthew, you should come over with me. We're going to watch a movie really quick. We just have to watch one scene. And you fast forwarded to it and you were just like, this is going to be awesome.
Super cool. There's something to be said about that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and it's nice too, like talking about the skinny screens, is they figured out that you're going to have a separate sound system.
Yeah.
Don't even pretend anymore.
I fried my amp because I was being real dumb. And it cost like $100 to replace. And I spent so much money last month on gifts and stuff. I've just been like, you know what? I'm going to put it off. Like, I don't need to like pull the trigger right away. And life is so much more disappointing when you don't have a great sound system. It's just like, having a really nice sound system is something that I take for granted. And
I feel it, dude. I had so connected to my TV at the moment is a pill type of thing. It's not that, but just one of those little Bluetooth speakers.
I've got my Bose SoundLink is how I've like played. Actually, my Apple TV has been working pretty well, but
yeah. So Alexa's actually been an upgrade. I'm like, wow. That should tell you something where I'm at. I have a better sound system on my office, but that was pretty nice.
That's pretty funny.
Dude, that's great. TVs, man. They continue to just like any bended screen stuff. I don't know. I didn't look that closely.
No, everybody was like, nobody ever answered the question of why, what's the advantage of the curved TV?
Well, from what I understand too, it actually significantly reduces the viewing angle to where you're like, yeah, there's like 5 feet where it makes sense to sit in the center. And if you're not there, then it looks dumb.
Yeah, it's never.
But man, if you're there, that's freaking awesome. And it turns out that there's usually more than one person in a household.
It turns out that you buy these giant TVs so you can share them with an entire room of friends on Super Bowl. Jeez, it's so dumb. But anyway, yeah, so there were very few, there weren't any curved TVs, but there was, one of my favorite things.
Just by the way, watch the highlights of the wild card stuff. NFL, dude, it's jumped the shark. There's some ugly games, but anyways.
I will say this. This was the first weekend where I was like, I was bummed to not be paying attention. Like, there were some teams that I wanted to root for, and I went out.
Who
last
do you want to root for? We root for the Raiders. Don't tell me that.
No, I'm full on. Next year, I've decided next year I'm getting either a Kansas City Chief hat or a Raiders hat, and I'm leaning towards the Raiders. But
see how their quarterback situation evolves before you decide.
That is not a small consideration. In
Dude, I feel bad for that guy.
I know.
You're a rookie. Here's your starting debut in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. Have fun. It's rough.
They didn't lose as bad as I thought they would.
No, they're kind of an okay team. It's crazy. But anyways, I got invited to a Super Bowl party and I committed to it. And I was just like, I can't help myself, James. It's playoff football. So much fun. But I agree. I'm kind of like a, but this is
the problem is the teams that I want to be in the playoffs are part of the same conference. So, or in the Super Bowl, they're part of the same conference. So I'm like, I'm not going to get that Super Bowl I want.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Like a Packers Seahawks. That would be an amazing Super Bowl. Not going to happen because they're both NFC. But
yeah, hopefully the Packers.
I'd be okay with that. Honestly.
Good. Cause anyways, we're not here to talk about football teams. So one of my favorite parts about CES is when you have like the really bad names for stuff, or just like,
yeah,
but just the PR guys, they're like, they don't have a good product, or they have a good product but it just doesn't stand out anyways, so the PR guys come in and try to like spruce it up. And so LG had a moment of this. They announced a 4K sound bar. That's how they described it.
Okay.
Yeah. So a 4K sound bar, it is not a thing. 4K is
yeah, that measures pixels.
Yeah, it's exactly that on like at a specific resolution, at 4K resolution, the number of pixels across the bottom or across the length of the TV is almost 4,000. That's how they come up with that name.
Yeah.
Which is
slightly annoying.
Yeah. And so it's, but that's where they come up with the 4K versus like the 1080p. Cause it's like,
yeah.
So they call it the 4K soundbar. And the guy goes,
the 4K soundbar.
Yeah. And they're like, what does that mean? So the reporter, when they actually talked about it, was like, so what is a 4K soundbar? And they explained it to them. They said there's two channels and the channels are running at 24 bit sound at 96 kilohertz, which is actually pretty decent. I mean, like that's a high quality sound. For the record, it's a good soundbar. But what they did was they multiplied all those things together, those three numbers, and they said it comes up
4,608.
Okay, no. See, this is the problem. 96 times 24 times 2 equals 4,000, right?
Yeah.
But it's 96 kilohertz, which I'm sorry. But that's actually because they're saying that it's what they're literally were saying was that it was 4,000 bits worth of sound.
Oh, total.
96 kilohertz is not 96 times per second. It's 96,000 times per second. So it's actually 4 million bits of data being processed every second, which is like, number one, that's a rate. Not a static number of pixels. Number two, you're off by like an order of like three orders of magnitude.
Whatever. Right. It's a 4KK. Just leave it alone.
4KK. 4K square.
Market that one out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that kind of stuff. It's just so annoying and dumb. Like just people will just call.
See, hey, look, you know what? Not all marketers are good at math. It's okay. It
happens. They're not engineers. It's easier to teach.
Sounds really cool. It got us to talk about it. That's a win in their book.
You know what? Touche.
And they're like, and it's a good speaker. Once they look at it, oh, actually, this is decent. The name's dumb, but it's decent. They don't care. They get the sale.
I know. The worst part is that it confuses the dumb consumers. But They'd love to set that precedent, though, that you can have 4K sound be like the ones that pioneered that
4K TV.
I know. Gosh. Jeez. So TVs were a big deal, like they always
are. With the AI, right? Yeah. Oh, that's a word. Let's use it.
Yeah, exactly.
You can talk to it with a voice. AI. That's what my joke about work. I'll say it again. I keep telling the team we have to figure out a way to use AI in this new system we're creating, like, because that's a thing.
Yeah.
Like, but it doesn't. I don't care.
What does the A stand for? Artificial. What does the I stand for? Intelligence. Okay. What does the A stand for again? I say that every once in a while. I'm not sure if anybody ever did anybody ever watch Red versus Blue? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? So let's move on to cars. So turns out
On over to cars.
The Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, it has kind of turned into a car show in a big way. And that's been a growing,
which is interesting because there's like an auto industry show like happening this week as well.
Exactly, but they show off all their super high tech stuff. One of the things that's really exciting is that like this is the first year where it's felt legit. Like everybody has made a big deal about how the car industry like shows up to it, but it always kind of fills out a place, in my opinion, where it's like you got all this like super high tech, smaller, faster, more efficient, smarter. Like that's been the big move for a long time. And the car companies have started showing up in like the last 5 years in a big way. And they're like, yeah, and we have a car and it drives itself. It has an infotainment system. And you're like, that's just not exciting. But this year, yeah, everything was like, no, our cars are actually like smarter than most of the things on the floor, which you're like, okay, all right, you guys, you've earned your keep here. So let's start with this. Chrysler Portal is James's minivan of the future.
I'm looking at the pictures and you'll be able to see them too for thebros.com/276. This looks awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's only going to cost 60 grand.
Probably. Yeah. It's an
It changes colors,
which is awesome. It's a, the Chrysler Portal is an all-electric self-driving.
Is this a concept car?
Probably.
Dang. So never see the light of day.
Yeah. Awesome. It's unveiling its first all-electric self-driving concept car at CES this year. But it's not some sporty, sleek number that's all design and no functionality. Quite the opposite. The Portal is a family-focused minivan and unabashedly futuristic one to boot. Yeah,
it looks nice.
Yeah, it looks really cool. It's just that was a big thing. Everybody's got an electric car. Everybody's got a self-driving car. I want to build that, and Chrysler's getting on that bandwagon. But
I'm gonna have to buy a minivan this year or something. Man, I wish I could wait 5 years.
I guess I should
get another one in 5 years.
You should have put off your family.
What was I thinking?
I know. Jeez, come on. You should have taken a page out of my book, James.
You know, all that I really need, I think, now that I'm thinking about it, is just some sort of AR thing that I wear while in the car, so it seems like it's futuristic, and I'll be good to go.
Right? Yeah. There's a big big argument for that, you know, that the future is screenless, but AR...
Yeah, just make it a bland green car. You know, the special effects screen.
Yeah.
Blue, whatever, I don't care.
It was a...
And then let me fill in whatever I want.
One of my favorite radios, it was just like a sound system that I've seen in the last couple of years, was like completely impractical given modern technology, but it's like this beautiful wooden box with a speaker on it and nothing else. And it wasn't until you pointed your camera at it that it would do like the button overlay, and then they could actually like keep track of where your finger was like... it was an AR overlay for controlling it. Yeah, I thought that was really neat. And I think that's the future.
I can't look at these pictures because now I'm going to look at a real car I'm going to buy, which will be some used piece of garbage. And I'm just going to be like, ugh, it's not cool. Which I fully realize is Chrysler's intent. But I'll even look at a Chrysler van and go, ugh. I don't
know. So tell me about Waymo. What are they doing?
Yeah, okay. And I technically cheated. This was not at CES, whatever. It's this week and it's all related because, like you said, cars are kind of at it now. So Google, the Waymo company has announced a new self-driving minivan that, like, later this month is going to start doing public testing. And they are working with Chrysler as well. How about that? And but they call this one the Pacifica, which is probably like a regular minivan, but it's super highly modified. And one of the big things about it is that all of the self-driving parts or whatever are now made in-house by Waymo.
Whoa.
So here's one of the super cool, interesting things about it. So
did you say that this is Alphabet's Waymo? I feel like we need to repeat a little bit.
Yeah, sorry. Formerly Google self-driving car.
Yeah.
Alphabet, Waymo.
Let's not be too hip for the room. We have the article in front of us.
Sorry. Anyways. So they're building their own stuff. Like, for example, their LiDAR system. They said, like, they used to purchase them at $75,000 a pop. Which, like, oh, that's not cheap. Now they only cost $7,500 because they build them themselves.
That's awesome.
And it does exactly what they want, because they invented two types of LiDAR, apparently. There's a short wave and a long wave, and it allows them to, well, you know, it's like a dual camera lens. All of a sudden you can see things and objects, feel the depth type of stuff using LiDAR. Super nice. They've got a van that does it now, and it looks super sleek and sweet, and they're going to start test driving it, like I said, later this month. It's awesome. And it just further reinforces, like, they're not going to make their own car. They are partnering with others to make them.
Which I think is smart. I mean,
yeah, what they've said is, like, their official line is, let me scroll to it, is that they said, we're not in the business of making better cars. We're in the business of making better drivers. That's their mantra now. That's their thing, which, cool. I like it.
Super interesting, because it's like, yeah. And honestly, that's been a big thing too. There was a bunch of different companies that, like, were talking about, you know, how do we, because you've got Waymo, Google's or Alphabet's Waymo, which is like fully autonomous cars. Nobody's going to be involved in it. Then you've got like the driving assist, which Tesla has, and Mercedes is announcing a competitive product. And then you've got, and which is like way on the side of, no, humans are still very involved. And then there's like that middle ground of, okay, we're bridging the gap between the driver assist and the like lane tracking stuff, and full autonomous cars. Where do those technologies, like, where are they useful? And one of the things that companies are talking about is the idea of just being like, just making drivers better while they're driving. So you can, for example, if you're going along and something is happening on the road that you're not paying attention to, like, they'll alert you to the fact that, oh, there's a motorcycle in your blind spot, or they won't let you turn into the blind spot because there's a motorcycle there. And sort of blending the difference between what the driver is doing and what the car is doing. So you're sort of constantly working together. Yeah. And that's been a big, that is a direction that companies seem to want to go, because there is a lot of concern about Tesla's strategy of just making fully autonomous cars that maybe aren't fully autonomous.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting how they, car companies definitely have a very different vision for the path forward than, say, like tech companies. And I mean, the cynical, there we go. That's the word. The cynical person's like, well, yeah, cause they want to force you to upgrade multiple times. And so they want to slowly roll out these features. And I'm like, no, I don't think that's totally it. I mean, I'm sure that's definitely crossed their mind.
Yeah.
Cause they do kind of have to ship a car this year, and they do have to figure out ways to differentiate it. Whereas Google doesn't care. They're not shipping any cars, so they can wait until it's right. But I think it's deeper than that. It is a different philosophy. And I think it's weird where it's like, you get the sense like car companies, like, they like to drive. Yeah. They're probably bummed about the fact that it's all going to artificial intelligence and driving on its own.
Yeah, a lot of these...
Google's like, ugh, driving's so done.
A lot of these people have spent their entire... got into the industry and spent their entire career because they love
cars.
They like driving. They like that, you know, and so it's... Yeah, whereas Google sees it as a... Google is... There are a bunch of execs who... like have get stuck in Bay Area traffic all the time, and it's nothing but a nuisance. And either they have to drive themselves, which is super annoying, or they have to hire somebody to drive them, which is the exact same thing.
Yeah,
and it would be just cheaper if everybody had a self-driving car, an autonomous vehicle. But you know, honestly, so yeah, we also mentioned that a lot of these cars are getting smart features in the way of like Cortana or Alexa integration. There's actually there was an announcement this week too that a couple of companies are coming together to make like an open source software platforms for people to build apps that different companies can use to basically compete against Apple's CarPlay and Google's Android car thing, and there's a
CarPlay.
Yeah, a lot of exactly. There was a bit of a yawn from the tech industry. They're like, yeah, it's a great idea in concept. Like, I'm glad that they're doing that because you know, it's like not that they're glad they're doing it, but it's like, yeah, I can see why they'd want to do that. I could see how that would be good for consumers, but like only if they do it really well. And it just doesn't feel like the sort of thing that they're going to do better than having a bunch of car companies together build a single standard and try to compete against two of the greatest OS software companies on Earth. Like,
yeah,
it's not that the car companies.
Good luck with that.
They, you know, big companies have fallen because they thought, you know, oh, we're too good to be touched. But Apple and Google seem like the sort of companies they'll deal with it. But the other thing that happened this week was, and this is kind of cool. Ford announced that they're going to be making two new hybrids by 2020, both an F-150 and a Mustang.
2020?
Yeah.
It's forever from now.
I know. It's kind of weird how that, like, that date still feels like a long way away, but it's only 3 years away. You know what
I'm
really
important? I just updated our cartridge sales forecast to go through 2020.
But yeah, I've been talking about this for a long time. I think this is exciting because they were talking about different features that it's going to have. Number one, they're like, it'll have the Mustang will have the power of their V6 Mustang, which is a beast of a Mustang. And so, to have a hybrid that can do that will be amazing. And they're talking about how like one of the biggest pain points for contractors out on a job is generating electricity. Everything they use has power, so they have to have generators out there. Like, why not just have your truck deliver power? Which to me tells me one.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, which to me tells me one obvious thing is number one, they're going to be able to generate power, so they can have their generator just detached from the drivetrain. And the easiest way to do that is just never have the electric generation be attached to the drivetrain at all. So this is definitely going to be an electric car with a gas generator built into it, and which I'm really excited about because one of the advantages to an all electric drivetrain is super like great torque, both the low and the high end. And just the performance is amazing. And the reason why these companies don't do it is because it's really expensive to have two completely different motor systems in it. You need like a high quality electric motor and the battery backup, which is really expensive, and you need a gas generator. I think it's exciting that Ford is at the point where they think they can do it at a price point
smart.
that people will buy them. And I think you're going to get these. I think you're going to have these two cars that are amazing performers. They're not only will they get great gas mileage, but they'll also, which will be like that will be the perk of these cars. That won't be their main selling feature, I think. I think I have a feeling that they're going to sell these cars and they're just going to be monster performance cars, and they'll be really expensive, but you know, that's all right.
Man, that's normal.
Hmm. It's
So, that's cool though.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I want one. So yeah, moving
PCs. Yeah,
the personal computer, man. The PC's back, baby. There was a whole slew of different personal computers this year that kind of usually in years past the PCs have been like the TVs. Like, oh, it's a computer that's thin and light and fast and
yeah,
but only slightly more so than last year. Whereas this year they're really kind of coming into their own. They got the 2-in-1s where you've got the it's a laptop, tablet. They've got the convertibles, which I'm not exactly sure how those are different than the 2-in-1s, but they are. There were a bunch of VR ready computer solutions, both laptops and desktops. Gaming laptops were just like were monstrous. They had the ultra portables were a big thing with the trying to shame Apple and their MacBook Pro lineup. And yeah, these computers are all affordable. They're robust, they're experimental, and most importantly, they're not boring, which is kind of fun. And just to go through the list of all the different computer options that they had out there. There's one in particular that I think caught both your and mine attention. And it's kind of great. It's actually a demo computer that they haven't finished building it yet, but they're like they were showing it off. It's Razer's Project Valerie, which is Razer's a company I really like. They're fun. They like to get crazy with it. But when you open up the article, they show the laptop, and it is literally a 17-inch laptop. And it's got the internals of their highest power gaming laptop.
Yep.
And it has three monitors. Like two monitors slide out, so it's you get this like continuous 17-inch monitor.
Crazy.
I know.
Looks pretty awesome.
It's so over the top.
Open that bad boy up in Starbucks.
I know. I was thinking.
What are you working on? Not what I am.
Yeah, I was thinking on an airplane.
Center seat.
I'll take a middle seat.
And then you just open a big Excel spreadsheet on that.
Well, we're not gonna watch a movie because I thought we were gonna watch a. We could literally watch three different movies, and you're gonna.
We could watch Apollo 13. Yeah, it's an option.
That is just so over the top and ridiculous, but so much fun. I love it.
I love the folding screen idea.
I know.
It's that sweet.
They like slide out.
I think I was reading though, right? That like it doesn't act. It can't actually run all of them at once, or it was something weird. Project Valerie has the same graphics card and keyboard as a Pro. It had something like the extra screens will take a toll on the battery life. Yeah. There was something weird where it was like, you couldn't quite. Like maybe I had to dumb down the pixels per inch or something.
Yeah,
like that.
It's not the other computer that has the same internals is a 17-inch 4K like screen. These screens aren't full 4K. That'd be just too many pixels. So
yeah,
it's for people who
there we
like
go. The
having
Blade Pro with its NVIDIA graphics card. A mechanical keyboard is effectively a desktop PC replacement, but if you want more than one screen, you still have to rely on external peripherals. Oh, okay, I gotcha. It was saying one of their old ones, you had to use a peripheral. This one, they're like, boom, it's just all in one.
Yeah.
Never mind, it's cooler than I thought. I misread it.
It
does work, as you would think it should.
It's an amazing computer. There's also a good article that if you go to the website, we won't run through them all, but just if you want the lineup of all the different computers that came out via The Verge, they did a good summary. And
they're good about that.
Yeah, exactly. I loved this one. Samsung found courage to put a full-size HDMI port in its 13-inch Ultrabook. Wow. That hurt a bit. That kind of landed. I honestly, I mean, I know Apple's still selling a bunch of laptops and they're making good money and they're not that worried, but they got to get their Mac lineup going, because the other companies are coming and they're like, these are all expensive, high end, high performance, computers that are, you know, for the longest time, the only computers that were exciting were the Mac lineup, because they were beautiful and they were highly powerful and they were small. It was like, you were paying a lot, but you got a package that nobody else could compete with. And I think one of the things that all these other companies are doing is saying, look, we can't necessarily compete in the Ultrabook category, but we can compete. And in that price range, we can give you something worth that much money. And on top of it, a lot of these companies are coming at Apple hard in the Ultrabook category. HPI, for example, you know, having their like, no, we'll just have a great, really light laptop. And, you know,
well, that's the weird part, because it's one of those where it just tells you how little attention Apple's giving it, because it was way ahead and you would think if they kept on pace, you'd still be making that same statement of, yeah, HP's Ultra Portable is pretty cool, but man, the performance still pales in comparison to Apple's thing. But yeah, that's
Apple's
not true anymore.
Apple's Ultra Portable doesn't have HP's Ultra Portable doesn't have a touch bar.
Yeah, super dumb.
Nothing to anybody. Jeez. Whatever.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Totally with you there. It also seems like these things come in cycles where, I don't know if you remember this, but I want to say it was like, well, now it's probably like 4 years ago. Like, TV was on the verge of dying.
Yeah.
And I remember having these conversations of like, man, do you think TV's going to go away? And it's like, just nothing's interesting and cord cutters left and right. And it's like, TV's back. Something, I know. I mean, I know what happened is there was this transition where, I mean, I think you remember this, where there were serial shows. I'm thinking, for whatever reason, Friends, where you could watch a single episode, and it was self-contained.
Yeah.
And for the most part, you're like, all right, yeah, that's cool. And then there were ones that did the cliffhangers that were always super dumb. Which, by the way, I have a complaint I'm going to air in just a little bit here. But for the most part,
Don't leave me hanging, James.
Unlike these other shows, I won't. But it was this idea of they were meant to go on forever, essentially. Again, like Friends, right? Or you could just like, they just decided to stop one day because they got tired of doing it and they stopped.
Right.
Right. And then they got into this whole thing. It was what was it? The not reality. Yeah.
Reality TV
just
shows.
Reality,
yeah.
Right? Reality TV shows. And unscripted dramas, if you will.
Yeah, which I think
that's what everyone was like, and that became like a thing, and everyone was like, okay, death of TV.
Yeah.
Here we come.
No effort, you know? TV.
Yeah, because they were like, oh, it's super cheap and it's genuinely entertaining for some really weird, visceral reason that we don't understand, but we're going with it. And then they would like create scenarios to generate, again, it was like unscripted drama. Anyways, and the way that they cut it would make it even more dramatic, yes. And it was like, and it really felt like, oh, TV's dying.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden... And I really feel like shows like Breaking Bad get a lot of credit for this. Where
100%. I think if there was any one show you could point to, it'd be Breaking Bad.
Yeah, where they said no, this will have a finite. It's multiple season, but finite story, and we will tell this whole story, and it will be integrated, and you cannot miss an episode.
Yeah,
otherwise,
It was this twofold thing of, and like in parallel, you had the movies were changing, because it was like,
yes,
the number of blockbusters has increased year over year over year. And by like movies that succeed to huge financial success globally, like movies do better despite what everybody says than they ever have. But it's been at the expense of great dramas. Like great dramas just don't get made anymore. You can't get those greenlit. What Breaking Bad taught the entire industry was you could create amazing dramas long form stories, things that you could never do with movies, and you could film it in a way that would allow these major stars to do other projects, because that's the advantage of movies, right? It's like, it's high intensity work for a couple of months, but then you go and do this, whereas TVs would just take over your life. You were either in TV or you did movies. You couldn't do both. And what Breaking Bad taught everybody was that, like,
unless you're Michael J. Fox.
Exactly. Was that you didn't sleep. You could, which you could, the idea that you could have a schedule like a movie star, but make TV and have it be amazing. Actually have it be a better story than anything you do in a movie. And when Breaking Bad did that, like you said, it changed something. All of a sudden we got excited about these screens in our living rooms again, because for whatever reason, like, that's, you know, and it brings it back around.
And so we're seeing this TV renaissance, another golden age, if you will, here's my complaint. And then we'll talk about how I think this is happening in the laptop arena too.
Okay.
So I've watched a couple Netflix series. Specifically, I watched The Travelers and then The Magicians, which, by the way, Magicians is definitely mature audience only. To the, like, House of Cards level, where you're like, I don't know if I feel great about watching this. but both of these two, Travelers, by the way, that one's great. Highly recommend that one. Except for the fact, and yeah, a little bit of a spoiler, like, there seems to be this new trend of right when the climax, like, the big thing is happening, we're going to end the season in the middle of it.
Yep.
I'm like, what the heck is that about? No! Come on! Like, do the big thing, and then let there at least be a small little brief, like, well, the exhale, and then give me the teaser to hook me for next season. Like, but finish this story. This is, and this is the other annoying part. As you can see, I care a lot about it. They're like 13 episodes. Like, look, what are you getting at here? Like, just do a full 20 or something. Just finish this particular plot. What are you doing? That's not a season. That's not the end of a chapter. There's no, like, what are you always talking about in your storytelling, right? You have your beginning, your rising action, the climax, and it falls. Like, right, there's that cycle.
You know, right. Yeah. It's a, the resolution.
Yeah. Like, they missed that part of it. Not as good storytelling.
You know what? It's honestly, the best, it's funny. The movie Cliffhanger, kind of popularized this idea of what is a cliffhanger. And this, the idea, like, the idea is literally the main character is hanging off the edge of a cliff. Is he going to fall? Is he not going to fall? Some TV shows cut it with him hanging off the cliff. And that's where they make the cut. And when they come back, the main character immediately gets saved. And you're like, well, that was completely not worth the payoff. Whereas other TV shows, like 24, used to have the main character fall off the cliff and then hit the ground and break both legs, but be alive. And it's like, it's a completely different type of cliffhanger, even though it's 10 seconds worth a cut, like, just, but they mean something so different. It's okay to not resolve everything. It's okay to create more questions than answers with the end of your season, but just do something. don't have it
for me,
you know.
It's like, so I don't know how to, like, but so, you know how normally TV series, They're building up to the big conflict, and then it's usually like it doesn't get resolved until the last episode of the season.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, oh my gosh, and then you have like the 5 to 10 minutes of the kind of putting the bow around that season and putting in the teasers and the hooks for the next season.
Right.
And I get it. And then normally some time passes and you go on, and but this one, it's literally like, I'm watching this one, and it's there. The guy is in the middle, ready to do something. Someone else breaks into the room, which totally throws the entire thing into chaos. And like, whoa, this one plan that we were headed on. And there's like, and credits. You're like, wait, what? No, like, what?
Yeah.
I just, like, we literally, you, it felt like it was half a story. It was super annoying.
I'm glad you were able to air your grievances there, James, but we have, like, 20 minutes left, And
I'm sorry. But anyways, all that to say, I feel like the PCs are going through that same thing where there was that lull where you went, oh, no one can do anything interesting. And now they're all saying, actually, I think we got something.
We learned a lot of tricks from mobile, and we're expanding that lineup. And yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, so it's exciting again.
But you want to know what's exciting, James? Smart TV.
That was kind of a diatribe, wasn't it?
You know what else is kind of, yeah, the best part is like, now that we've brought it back around, it's like, man, you really had to go far out of your way to complain about that T-shirt. You wanted it.
I did.
But
it's happened to me twice in a row now. Just like, wow, what the heck?
Yeah, I know. Just crazy too. Bad TVs, nothing worse. Yeah. So you. So one of the
CES.
There was a great article that's worth reading. In this section, I thought, but as no, this toothbrush doesn't have artificial intelligence. That's because it was a toothbrush that the Colibri.
It will be labeled, no, your cool CES tech doesn't have AI, just so you know when you're looking for it.
Oh, there we go. Thank you. The first, you're right. The first toothbrush with artificial intelligence was the tagline. And the long and short of it is, no, that's
How
not.
How does that work?
That's not, it doesn't.
Okay.
So. The Colibri toothbrush, which claims to have its own embedded AI, basically what happens is it's just like, it's got analytics in it. So it's got sensors and like it can connect to Wi-Fi, I guess, which is kind of ridiculous. And then they can just do like, they have analytics that they can then like keep track of it with, which isn't artificial. It's sort of like your complaint about like that one department that was using, quote, big data. And you're like, this is definitively not big data, what you're doing. And this toothbrush is trying to make the same argument. But the Bonjour alarm clock and Amazon Echo with a screen, which promises its AI algorithms will ease your morning routine, which like is just, no, it just keeps track of what you set and like, helps you do that. Or the Sleep Numbers 360 smart bed, which appears in its ads as an anthropomorphized AI bed that tells the user in a breathy voice, I can feel your heart rate, your breathing, your movement.
That's not creepy.
I know, right? LG's new range of appliances, which the company says are powered by deep learning and come with their own artificial intelligence. One of the things that like is a common theme is like, I like this one. Powered by AI, an impressive sound claim that that in terms of actual functionality boils down to just two features. One, you can control the UI with your voice, and two, the headphones will give you this is a specific example of a product that has headphones, but the second feature is the headphones will give you music recommendations based on listening habits. So if you like to put on jazz in the evening, guess what Da Vinci is going to play you tomorrow night? Hint, more jazz. Which you just like, yeah, it's not really how artificial intelligence works. You know, these things are getting smarter. They've got more processing power inside of them. And these developers are using that, which is exciting and cool in its own way. But it's just, you know, AI marketing run amok. So that's what we're going to keep our eye out this year for, is really, really bad marketing.
I said it in jest, and that's why, because you could just feel it.
Yep. Yeah. Everybody's going
saying
that way.
Smart isn't good enough anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's a different type of smart. The Nest, obviously, this is when you're talking about smart stuff. I thought this was one of the more exciting ones, was just in the idea of an integrated home, not just smart devices, but devices that work with each other. And we talked about this earlier with the Nest that connects to the GE connected oven and will literally turn your oven off if it smells smoke, which is,
I agree with you. There's something to be said about the integration point where different devices, they're triggers of sorts, but they're smart triggers. Like I'm trying to set one up, because it didn't work perfectly, and I don't know why. But and this is a dumb one. But essentially, when I turn on my office light, I want it to also automatically turn on my office lamp.
Yeah.
The reason being, eventually, I'm going to switch it from a lamp to some rope lights.
Oh, nice.
I don't want to have to plug in and off. But But that's the idea, is like, oh, it's a trigger. If I do one thing with one, it does another. Like, I've got one now where if my front door unlocks after sunset, it turns my entry light on 70%.
That's exactly. Work together, guys.
Yeah.
If this and that is yelling at us right now, like, we could do that. But, you know, the more that these things just sort of do it themselves, the better, I think.
Well, that was, I know, like, Nest did internally that, where if it detected smoke, the thermostat would turn off your heater,
right,
which is smart.
Yeah.
But even if, like, the oven to shut it down, like, that's even smarter.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's probably.
Turn off the source.
Yes, exactly.
Love that idea.
Yeah. So,
well, and you should have stuff too, where, like, in theory, like, if you've got a Nest cam and you've got a thermostat or whatever, it can tell if you're home or away. And then it's like, dude, you're not here. Yeah, we're just going to shut this thing down.
No, it's actually, that's one of the things that it does, is if you leave and leave your oven on, it sends you an alert.
Cool.
I know.
Brilliant. I love it. That's smart. I know.
They're like, did you mean to leave without your oven on or with your oven on? So yeah, I love it too. Vivinet.
That's such simple low hanging fruit. That's super helpful.
Exactly.
I love it.
There's a company called Vivint, V-I-V-I-N-T apostrophe S. The company, or their product, is called Sky. This is really kind of neat. Basically, they're offering a connected home, a smart home solution. And it's a $99 smart startup fee, but it'll come with a host of sensors and devices and stuff that have integrations with Google Home and Echo. Then you pay $50 to $70 a month, depending on how many devices you have in your house. And it connects you to their, like, online cool, their cloud-based software to kind of give you this really well-connected house. Because one of the problems that we've talked about is this whole integration problem. How do you get them all to work together? How do you get all these different triggers going? Vivinet's solution is like, look, we'll give you the devices that will all work together. We'll install them for you. So we'll make it dead simple. And arguably hefty fee. We'll make it continue to work for you. We'll do the heavy lifting of integrating it, which is cool, because it's like, this is the first time we're seeing something like this, but I definitely think this is a direction we're going to go in the future, where more companies are going to come out with packages like this to say, you don't have to piecemeal it together. You don't have to figure out how to tie all the services on your own. You just pay a fee and everything comes along with it.
So they will figure out how to connect to your different devices for you?
No. That's you pay $99 and they come in with sensors and lights and stuff.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, there's sensors and lights.
I it doesn't say specifically.
Or whoever's is in the part of their program.
Yeah, exactly. And because they've got all this back-end software, if you bring in new equipment, they can make it integrate with it, I think it's clever. It's an idea of, it's the reason why it's so expensive is because you're buying hardware from them in a month to month fashion, basically. And they get subscription based pay for it.
I actually got approached by somebody, that was asking me, I don't want to say it, if I was, or if I knew a smart home consultant.
Did you say yes?
And I did actually. And, I'm setting up it's kind of cool. There's a builder in this area who wants to do smart home stuff. It's an unofficial type of thing, but yeah, come talk to us. Make sure we set this up right. So it'll work. And I mean, the only reason why it's me is because I make a big deal about the fact that I went out to the smartest home on the block and I've been doing some cool things. But there's this need and this desire out there for non-hacker types of people to figure out how these things work.
Yeah.
And which is the comment that we've made. Again, it's like, man, if Amazon can genuinely figure this out, or Google Home or whatever, HomeKit, like, to be that thing. And I don't think HomeKit's there, because they got to have. Yeah. But Alexa has this chance of, if they can figure out how to connect to the things and do it pretty simply, which it has been, like with my with the lights, I searched for the Lutron and it was like, yeah, learn this skill. And I went, okay, cool, I learned it. And then it said, all right, we're sensing the area. And I went and found all my lights. I went, you want to add them? And I was like, cool, done. And then I created some groups, one I called kitchen, one I called living room, and put them together. And I can say, turn off the kitchen lights, and it works. And it was fairly straightforward. Now, granted, to get to that point, though, I had to install light switches, and I had to have a hub, and I had to go through the app and connect them all. And like to get to that last mile, if you will, I was like, okay, that was easy. To get to that point, though, not so easy. I'm not afraid of electrical, so I'm okay with it. But they were just like, to have something to help you do that, extremely valuable. Because people want these things. They're genuinely cool and helpful.
That's the reason why I brought it up. I don't think we'll ever talk about this company again, except the idea that this is a way to solve that, to take it from, you know, when we talk about your early adopters into your, what are the four categories?
Your early majority, late majority, and your laggards.
Yeah. And it's like, we were still clearly in most of this home stuff is in the early adopter phase and has been for years, which is driving people nuts. And it's like, okay, how do we're just starting in what's cool about Alexa is that it seems to be breaking into the early majority like market. And it seems to be pushing people over because it's easy enough to use.
Well, you start to see, like, you've got your Echo in your home and you can do all this cool stuff and you start scrolling through the skills going, all right, well, what else can you learn? Apparently there's 7,000 of you.
Yeah.
And one of them is home automation. And you go, huh. And I think that's something where Amazon can do a better job of, like, oh, you want to turn your lights on and off your lights, order it on Amazon right here.
Right.
Like, you can do that. They could do a better job of that. But I think it prompts people to say, oh, what else could I do? Ooh, I could turn my garage door open and shut. That'd be cool.
Yeah. I agree. So now that being said, there are dumb solutions to this problem.
Yes.
Seven Hugs is a touchscreen smart remote that can control any smart device you point it at, which sounds really neat. Like when I read this like title, I was like, oh man, that's cool. Like you get like a remote control. You can point it at anything in the house. And it's exactly like that. You got a smart lights, smart TV, smart refrigerator, anything smart. You point it at it. It's got a little touchscreen on it. So it can come up with a specific like UI for it. So like your Nest, you point it at your Nest and it comes up with the thermostat and you can change it and it'll change your Nest. Sounds neat, right?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. This is what's dumb about it. In order to do this, it needs to be aware of where everything is in your house. And how you accomplish that is by telling it where everything is in your house. That means literally you set up all sorts of sensors in your house so it can do motion tracking in your house. Then you point it at what you want it to point at, and then you like it learns that location based on it, which isn't a bad solution to this problem. Except that is an unbelievable amount of startup. That is just
I feel like what if I kind of like, man, TV? If you could do all those sensors, that's it.
I know. It's one of those things where I'm like, this is just so not the right answer to the problem. This is where I look at.
Well, that's where voice control is just so much easier.
I know, because it doesn't matter.
I feel like this is a solution looking for a problem that's already been solved.
I 100% agree. If I could bring it into my house and it could auto discover the location of a bunch of devices, which is like impossible. So this is just a complete.
Or you do some sort of initial training, whatever, and then there's some sort of home base that you always put it on to charge the battery in, and then it was always able to reset its location when you did that.
Yeah,
like,
or
that'd be cool.
And I just. You got to install hardware. You got to teach it where stuff is. If you move your TV, you got to reteach it where your TV is. It's just not how TVs work. People don't like that sort of stuff. I don't know.
Who moves their TV?
Well,
I feel like once it's there, it's there.
Well, okay. You know what? I think you
missed. Now your toaster art?
Exactly.
Your smart toaster? Okay, I'm with you there.
I don't know. I feel like, yeah, I agree. There's a lot of that goes on at CES. solutions looking for problems and bad PR.
I just, the voice control's got that one.
Yeah.
What's it going to give you? Now, I don't know. Maybe it'd be nice to have a remote, flip it over to your thermostat and be able to see the temperature that it's at right now, plus some other stats, I guess. But, like, I know, like, with mine, it has a big screen on it anyways, and I just read the screen if that's what I want. And then you could just tell it, turn my temperature up 2 degrees.
Yeah.
Done. I feel like that's super easy.
So I got a couple of more things that I want to get to because they're exciting. But, because we're kind of coming up on 2 hours, aren't we?
Holy cow, we are.
Yeah. And I don't want to do what we did last week again. So the Draco.
I agree.
The Draco, James, is it's what you want. I can tell. It's 100 mile per hour racing drone.
Oh,
a stock comes out of the box able to do 100 mile an hour. Yeah, you can limit it in software.
That's so fast.
You can limit it.
Why would you ever limit
in
it
in software? Because it's because it's an object that can travel at 100 miles per hour, and even if it were lighter than it was, it still really hurt. But it's a first person view drone. So you put on the little headset and you can see it through the camera. Yeah. Yeah. And then you could take off and fly at 100 miles per hour.
100 miles an hour.
Yeah. And I guess this thing,
that's pretty fast.
I guess
how far can it go? Cause like you can get 100 miles, you can get far away pretty fast,
really fast at 100 miles per hour. I didn't see that. But one of the interesting parts about this product is they're like, the big thing that they're into in this product is they're like, yeah, everything's modular and replaceable. Which you're like,
yeah,
that sounds like a good idea, because you hit something, but it only costs $500. Like, that's affordable.
Really?
I know. One of the issues with it, I don't think it comes with the head, the camera. Yeah, which those aren't.
That's a requirement.
Yeah, and those aren't cheap. One of the interesting things watching them actually like try it out is, dude, the reporter who was talking about it, he was like, "Look, like my gig is I have the CEO, like I'm the drone guy. I test all the drones." He's like,
"Yeah,
I know how to fly drones," and he had a really hard time flying this thing. He actually crashed it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he's like, as racing drones are racing drones, they're highly maneuverable, but they require a skill set. They're not like, he goes, you know, any other drone in the market, you take your hands off the controller and it just hangs there in space and doesn't move. This thing falls out of the sky.
Oh,
and. You know, obviously it's a high quality racing drone, but that's just the nature of racing drones. They're designed so that, you know, one of the ideas being that you can fly up 100, you know, way up in the air and then just drop out of the sky and do cool maneuvers and catch yourself. But it means that you need to be able to like do that. It's a skill that is difficult to come by.
That's awesome. I don't know to buy one, but I want to fly one.
I know. Me too.
I just want to try the virtual reality glasses while flying the drone.
Yeah.
I feel like I would puke
the FPV,
given how well I've handled virtual reality, but I still would like to try.
This one's a little bit different because the first person view stuff is like the camera's fixed. So it's just, it blocks out all other distractions.
Wait, what do you mean by that?
It's literally, it's a fixed camera on the drone.
Yeah, but if you move the drone, your view obviously changes.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
I guess it's like playing a video game, right?
Yeah. I think it's different. I don't think you'd have
as. You can't move your head around and look around.
Correct.
That would be the difference.
Right.
Okay.
It's like it's like strapping. It's
just like having a big monitor, computer monitor.
Yeah.
But
strapped to your face. Yeah.
Okay, I could probably do that, because that's not virtual reality. That's something different.
I don't think you'd have a
problem. I don't know what that is.
I don't think you'd have a problem with it. That being said...
Who do we know?
I know. That being said, VR and AR was a bit of a thing this year as well. Asus announced that they're going to be launching a new phone that actually, a lot of people said, kind of took the cake for coolest smartphone. It has Project Tango built in and Daydream, which are Google's AR and VR platforms.
Makes sense.
Yeah. If we were going to, if we're doing a product giveaway, James, I think this should be up on the list of potentials. Really? Yeah. Cause I want to try it out.
Depending on the price.
Point. I know. I might, you know, honestly, I might, even if we don't do it as a giveaway, it might be fun to do it as a, buy it and return it. Do a product review on it because I'm excited about it. But yeah, so it's got Project Tango built in, AR, like inside out. That has become the term, by the way. Like, that's the thing. What's the difference? Your PlayStation and HTC are outside in tracking, whereas the HoloLens and Tango are inside out tracking. So all of the tracking is done on the headset or the device, and that's inside out. That's actually, weirdly enough, that is actually how the HTC works. Is it works inside out, but you need the fixed.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Well, you need, except the tricky part is you need the fixed beacons in the room, and so it doesn't. It gives you room scale, but it does, like, it can't work without an outside fixture. I think that's why they describe it that way. But,
Interesting.
Yeah. Along with the cool VR stuff, there was an entire category of really dumb VR stuff. Like, there's a VR foot gear, as the guy described it. Yeah, basically they're like accelerometers. They basically have a nine degrees of freedom.
I love this idea. How is that bad?
Well, it's fun, except it's not good.
Oh, come on, execution. Yeah, whatever. The idea is a good idea, though.
Well, yeah, and it is, and there will be like, one of the big complaints I know everybody I ever talked to has is like how you're this like legless ghost in VR, and this would solve that problem to some degree because it'd have foot tracking. But like in this example, they're like, yeah, basically, like, it was a kicking game where you'd kick and it would show you kicking. But like, all you had to do is like kick like 2 or 3 inches off the ground, and it would do the full kick it's just a really,
that's horrible.
Yeah, it's just a really gimmicky motion controller. It was a lot of that kind of stuff
reminds me of Wii Tennis.
There was a lot sort of that sort of gimmicky stuff. But what wasn't gimmicky was HTC turned it up a little bit. So
they
open sourced they started a program where you can do third-party peripherals, which is kind of exciting. There were a couple of those, I guess, but the big winner was HTC built what's effectively a motion tracker that just is like a universal one. It's this little, looks like a little bit like a hockey puck with some like tabs coming off it where all the cameras are. Works just like their motion controllers, except you can attach it to things and affix it to things. And then you tell the program what it's attached to. For example, you have a baseball bat and you attach it to the base of the baseball bat. And then that does the motion.
Really dumb idea, I know, for the record.
It does the motion tracking, but now since you're just telling it what the size of the bat is, the bat can show up in VR and you can actually see it and stuff. And so they were doing like,
that'd be cool for sword battles instead of bats.
Yes, that's definitely. And also, but they're like, yeah, you could do like baseball games and stuff. You could swing the bat. And yeah, the company that was doing that, they were like, yeah, definitely. This is designed for a controlled environment.
Yeah. I want to shout.
But
got some wooden bat in your house. You're swinging around.
I know. The kid walks into the room and doesn't tell you.
That'd be bad.
I know. They had other examples of this where like people had like these really high quality guns, like toy guns that had like recoil and stuff, and then they just attach the tracker to it. So basically why this is exciting is because it allows third parties to they don't have to go through the $3,000 program to do all the motion tracking. It just sort of happens. And it's exciting and it integrates with your system.
How big is this little dot thing?
It's the size of a hockey puck.
Okay.
You know how, like, you know the motion controller, the HTC motion controller, it kind of fits in your hand and it's got that like circular thing at the top. It's the size of that circular thing. It basically is that circular thing.
Okay. I was just trying to figure out like what kind of peripherals, like how big they would have to be.
Yeah,
in order for it to work
effectively.
I mean, it's not
effectively what happened was people, what HTC realized, that people were taking the motion controllers and taping them to their peripherals.
Yes.
And that's how they were making it work. And so HTC was like, look, we'll give it a nice mounting base. And
yeah, I was just thinking, like, could you do it with a set of golf clubs?
And oh yeah.
No, not really. Cause it's too thin.
Yeah. Except unless, yeah, maybe. I think there are solutions for it, but yeah, I'd agree. You know, it's not perfect, but that's where being a third party developer,
3D printing comes in.
Yeah. Well, third party developer, it gives you an advantage because you could make something specific for,
you could build it in.
You could make it long and cylindrical, and then all of a sudden you'd have the solution you need. So
that's cool.
Yeah. And then the other thing that they talked about was, and this actually wasn't debuted at CES, but it debuted in America. People actually got to use it. But HTC talked about their new wireless the adapter thing that cuts,
now you're regretting your purchase,
cuts
aren't
the
you?
Cord. No, it's the dongle is $300. I mean, it's not, but this $300
next generation will be built in. Don't worry.
Probably this $300 dongle basically replaces the all of the cables that go between the headset and the device. And so finally, like, actual reviewers got to try it out, and the general consensus was it works, which is pretty amazing because, that's a very difficult task. Like, we don't have good streaming for just streaming, like Apple TV streaming, for example, isn't great. And in that it's super responsive and quick, you can notice the lag. And so the fact that they managed to do this with really high resolution, incredibly fast, refresh frequencies, is really impressive. So it's just exciting because it's happening. And HTC also announced their Viewport VR app store is going to have a subscription model built into it. So one of the big problems with VR is that a lot of these like programs and stuff, you pay $30 for it, you have no idea the quality of it. This is HTC's attempt at a solution. They basically just allow developers to opt into it, and if you are paying a subscription fee, and then you'll have access to a whole bunch of different types of content. And developers will get a cut of that, and which I think is cool. It's a it may not be an end all solution, but it's a good way to
interesting idea
to keep
where you like. It's almost like a music subscription. I kind of like this idea. Apple should do this too. All app stores should do this.
I love it.
You pay a subscription, you get access to all the apps, and for however long you use it, that app gets a cut of it.
Yeah, I love it. I think
that's a brilliant idea. That's a brilliant idea. Oh my gosh, we're sitting on a brilliant idea right now.
Video games do it.
I would happily pay. Geez, I don't know what I would pay, but I would happily pay like at least $10 a month. I might even consider 20.
Well, and honestly,
that's a lot.
And honestly, I like
to access for every single app in the App Store. Think about
it.
But
now that is difficult though, because it's like there's a lot of companies that make really good money by just you.
Well, whatever, you know, you can opt just like subscription stuff. Like you can decide, is this a one-time pay or is this part of the subscription?
I
apps could decide.
As a developer, I would love that.
That's easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like Apple Music.
Yep.
Yeah. Or whatever.
Either apps,
you can buy it on iTunes.
Or not.
That's cool. You don't have to. Or we got this music thing and not all songs are available on either. Maybe that's not true. But whatever. You could make it that way. YouTube Red. It's the exact same way.
Yeah,
oh my gosh. This is a brilliant idea. How has no one done this yet?
Yeah.
And it totally gets rid of the whole, like, I don't want to spend money to do this. And developers have a way to make money. Oh my. Wow. My head just exploded in awesome right now. Wow.
That's cool.
No, that's better than cool. That is like, think about this. You could have a newspaper reading app, join the subscription program, and now you could get paid for people reading your articles. Like, this is a way for news industries to monetize for, oh my. Okay. This is cool.
I like it. I like it. If it weren't for the fact that we were already
we're already over the show length, I'd probably go a little bit further in. But did you want to? I know we had talked about the wrap ups and stuff.
We'll let that idea simmer. Exactly. That's an amazing idea.
Did you want to run through any of the wrap ups really quickly? Yeah, I think we've covered everything I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, you know what? We really did. I think
that's why that's why we don't start with the wrap ups.
Yeah, that was good CES. Cool. Yeah. Good. Awesome year. I think just to kind of like to sum it all into a single thing, again, like some of the big things that voice controlled AI voice recognition stuff, that's huge. That plays a role in everything. TVs continue to do their thing. Cars are now there. They're going to be there from now on.
Yeah.
That's how that works. We'll see how long the PC is back theme holds together. Who knows? And there are always cool, smart things, and always dumb ones, but that's half the fun of it as well. And clearly VR, AR are going to continue on. It'll be interesting to see what the theme is for next year. I'm already done with this year. Let's move on. So on that note, thanks everybody for joining us. And thank you so much for listening to episode 276. We genuinely appreciate it. Don't forget, you can check out all the show notes with all of these links to all these different products that we talked about at furloughbros.com, episode 276. And if you want the summary compactly, neatly sent to you, you can sign up on that same page and get them sent to you. And then finally, this podcast is supported by listeners like you. And so if you would also like to contribute, we have four different levels. They are fanboys, nerds, junkies, and mavens, each of which have their own level of reward. And again, you can check out furloughbros.com to figure out how you too can become a patron. Well, I am James Furlough, and my golden... Is it Golden Globes? Is that the one?
Yes, sir.
All right, my golden brother is Matthew Furlough. And so we will talk next time.